I am Planta on the line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Once again, I'm joined by my friend and colleague, Sean Cranberry. He is the executive editor and host of Books on the Radio. It's a weekly radio program you can hear on CJSF Simon Fraser Radio. And you can read, listen, comment, debate, or whatever else you'd like to do on their website at booksontheradio.ca. We'll check in as we do regularly with Sean to talk about books or and whatever else is on his radar. He is the co-organizer of W2 Real Vancouver Writers Series, the Advent Book Blog, and Book Camp Vancouver. His own website is at seancranberry.com. Saturday, the 5th of March, at W2 Storium, we'll showcase the W2 Utopia Festival, Vancouver Women Read. Sean shall tell us more. Please welcome back to the Planta Online program, Sean Cranberry. Good morning, Mr. Cranberry.
How you doing, Joe?
Pretty good. Yourself?
I'm all right. Thanks.
So when I have you on, as with all my guests, I prepare notes. And invariably, when I do that, we end up talking about other stuff or just running out of time. So today there's only one thing on my sheet.
Okay.
What's going on Saturday, March 5th at W2?
Oh, that's an excellent question. So it's a so W2 is a nonprofit organization from represents various social groups and other nonprofit organizations in Vancouver's downtown east side, and W2 is also an event space in its current kind of shape at the Storium location. On Cordova Street downtown, and it's a huge space where we regularly have events that are like either musical events or events with groups like Homeless Connect in the downtown east side, or Philippine women's groups, who, and all kinds of different groups. Anyway, what's happening on Saturday is a huge event that's a partially an unconference and partially a musical showcase and a writer showcase. And it's happening, it's called the Utopia Festival. Women in Digital Culture is the subtitle, I guess, for the event. And it's an all-day event featuring, focusing mostly on music, but there is a writing component to it. And it's women DJs, everything from the electro clash superstar, whose name is Peaches, who lives in Berlin, and she's flying out for this event, to Betty Ford, who is a DJ who used to live in Vancouver and play in Vancouver, and now she's studying digital culture, women in digital culture at the University of Toronto, I believe, to a lot of other DJs in and around the city. And it's about recognizing and offering opportunities for other women in Vancouver or who want to come to this particular event to get advice and come together and share ideas about how that they can support each other and learn from each other and create better creative, enthusiastic space for women to, you know, excel in digital media in as DJs, as performers. Because I'm sure you know, I'm sure you've talked to many people on your show, Joe, who have similar experience, and it's not just unique to, like, DJ culture or music culture, but it's a male-dominated industry, right?
Right.
And, you know, you can't go through Vancouver and ever see any kind of, like, all-women lineups, whether it's DJ culture or anything else. So it's really just about empowering, giving the opportunity and bringing women together to showcase their creativity. And because I'm involved with W2 and in the planning stages of this event, I was like, well, let's have a readers component. Let's get, let's, you know, showcase, you know, Vancouver voices and women. And W2 said that's a great idea. So a couple friends of mine, Nikki Reimer and Alex Leslie, I asked them if they wanted to curate the event and be in charge of organizing it and talking to the other women writers and putting together a diverse, a culturally diverse, and creatively diverse group of women writers who can help participate in the event. So we've got Antoinette Rea, Hiromi Goto, I hope I said that name right, Kimberly Fu, Christy Lee Charles, and Hannah Calder, which is a huge range of women's voices, who will be reading as a part of the evening showcase, which I think gets started around 8 o'clock, and you can buy a separate ticket just to participate in that until the end of the night. And so they will be reading, but their readings will be punctuated by performances by amazing First Nations cellist Chris Dirksen, Peaches, and a couple other kind of performance-like performances, I guess, is for lack of a better word. So it's the first of its kind. It's going to be a very cool event, and it's a great chance for women to take over the W2 Storium space and to hopefully propel this into not only an annual festival, but into women creative artists having a bigger creative footprint, not only in Vancouver, but everywhere. So it's a start of something that'll hopefully be really, really big.
And people can get tickets by going to your website, booksontheradio.ca, right?
Yeah, you can go to booksontheradio.ca, or you can go to creativetechnology.org, which is the W2 website, and then just click the poster, or I think I've embedded a bunch of links in there, so it shouldn't be hard for people to find it, but it should be recognized that there is there are two different tickets, really. There's one ticket that includes the conference during the day, which is only open to women, no men are allowed, and that is where there's going to be workshops for creative women on DJing and networking and all kinds of other things happening during the day during the conference part. But then there's the general admission tickets, which will feature the performances by the writers and the DJs and Peaches and all that other kind of stuff. And those are $26, and those tickets are... the doors are open at, I believe, 8 o'clock for that.
So events like this, as you said, you participate with W2.
Yeah.
Events like this happen all the time, do they?
Yeah, I mean, not events quite like this. This is pretty unique.
Yeah.
But, there's all kinds of cultural activities happening in the W2 space. Everything from the Kootenay School of Writing just had a huge reading series where they had, 30, it's probably too many, but... 15 to 20 poets and writers reading. I think that was last week, which was really cool and successful. And then, there's lots of music events and various other kind of cultural groups in the downtown east side that we support that do these kinds of events too. So,
who owns the space? Is that the city?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the city owns it at the moment. And, it's 31,000 square feet, the one space that we have, which is just the street-level space. And then, of course, there's the downstairs space, which still contains, the remnants of Barkerville and all of those kinds of interactive museum displays that they had. And there's even a locomotive, kind of a mid-20th century locomotive in the basement that's still there. So it's a weird space. I never went to Storium when it was open. Did you ever go?
Yeah, I did, and I remember all that. The elevator, does that still work?
Yeah, the elevator's still there. But it doesn't work. I think it's effectively condemned for all practical purposes at the moment. But we don't use it. That's for sure.
I thought it was an interesting concept.
Yeah.
I didn't see how it could work. even when we went there.
Yeah.
And it just looked garish.
Yeah.
For lack of a better word. And
yeah.
So, I guess what you guys are doing there is probably a far better use of the space than...
Well, it's good because it allows community groups to have a big space to really kind of, to be creative with, some of the communities that have used it really appreciate being able to put in some interesting lights or hang things on the wall or do some kind of cool projection experiments or displays. So it's, I mean, for the limited time that W2 is using this space, you know, we're allowing people to do some really interesting things just by virtue of its gargantuan size, right? Like, I think you're totally right when you say that, you know, garish is one word, but impractical is, like,
yeah,
a word that you would use to describe Storium. Like, a great idea. Obviously, the guy had a ton of money and a vision, but, you know, they're just not, it just seems so ridiculous to think that there were, you know, people wandering around in these makeshift kind of dioramas of our perceived history, reenacting, you know, from script for an audience. It's really ridiculous.
Yeah. When we visit Books on the Radio's website, we notice that there are others contributing to the site other than just yourself.
Yeah.
Who are some of the people that you've got writing there?
Yeah, so Monica Miller is one. Monica works with the BC Book Awards and Word on the Street, among other things. And she's just a really enthusiastic writer and book person who's involved in the fabric of the kind of literary culture in Vancouver. She's great. Stephanie Cameron writes some really interesting pieces, and she's a blogger and a writer in Vancouver, and I met her. I know her through the online ether, but I know I met her, I believe, really, at mental health camp last year. We had a great conversation. We talked and we talked about, at that point, I was thinking about expanding Books on the Radio to include more voices and to include people who have interesting things to say or want to participate online but don't want to start their own blog to do it. Of course, Stephanie already had her own blog, and so does Monica. But Stephanie contributed a piece last month that was probably the most read piece in the short history of Books on the Radio, and she wrote about, you probably remember this, the choice by a publisher in Alabama, I believe.
Yeah, the Mark Twain deal, yeah.
Yeah, the whole Mark Twain deal, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, replacing the N-word and Huckleberry Finn with Slave, right?
Yeah.
So that generated a lot of conversation, and so Stephanie, being the iconoclast that she is and the opinionated woman that she is, wrote just a beautiful piece about how absurd that decision is and what it says and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And so that got picked up by a big kind of cultural affairs magazine in New York, and they posted about it on their website, and that drove a ton of traffic and started a ton of conversation. So, you know, I mean, that's best case scenario for anybody who has a website who, you know, like in Books on the Radio, I try and engage, you know, conversations about things that are happening in the world as they relate to books, and having Stephanie rock that out was awesome, because those are the kinds of voices that I want to cultivate and support. And then there's, you know, a few other people. Kathleen Fraser, she's a master of publishing from SFU. And she is working a little bit here and there with Books on the Radio. She did a couple of reviews for us and is working on some back-end stuff. So I like the idea of collaboration, and I like the idea of a multitude of voices. So it's great to be able to have more people who are interested in contributing, you know.
Well, we've talked about the book business, you and I, over the years.
Sure.
Are you surprised now, being the editor of Books on the Radio, with all these different voices, at the level of discussion that's cultivated?
I'm not surprised at all, really, because these people, I mean, Books on the Radio is a selective, you know, community in a lot of ways, in that, you know, I would never just allow any old person to write for Books on the Radio. So if Monica or Kathleen or Stephanie are contributing, it's because I believe that they deserve, you know, I'm honored to have them as a part of it, and I believe in their voices. So I think it's great. I think that one of the things that the Internet does is it liberates the voices and allows people to speak in their own voice without fear of being edited out. You know, that that the audience is everywhere, and that even if there are lots of people out there who don't want to hear what Stephanie or somebody else has to say, that's fine. There are other options, and I would never stand in the way of somebody moving on to their other options. But if they want really interesting criticism backed up by a passionate voice who cites examples, then Books on the Radio, I'm happy to have people who can do that, you know.
And you've been awfully busy, I understand. You're judging a book contest, are you?
The BC Book Prizes. I just got an email about that, actually, a couple of minutes ago.
Yeah.
So voting closed last Friday, and I sent in my list of five books. I think is how many I was allowed to choose, or that was the expectation, is every judge would choose five, and there would be a voting system based on that. And so, I guess middle of December, I received two big boxes full of books.
Yeah.
And, so the BC Book Prize is they send you, like, 50 books, and I'm judging the fiction category, but, of course, there's nonfiction, children's books, illustrated books maybe, and a poetry aspect to it too. So there's different parts of the BC Book Prizes, and I'm only involved in the novel kind of fiction aspect of it. But what a huge learning experience that was, Joe. From you know, just the quality of books, you really got to see the whole gamut, from essentially kind of self-published books, you know, books that have like a website as their publisher, and all the way through to really beautifully made independent presses, to, you know, just like your kind of professional grade Random House, HarperCollins hardcover books. So that's just the physical quality, and then the differing levels of editorial, you know, and you really got to see the whole breadth of publishing that happens in this province.
And these are just novels, fiction books from BC writers, right?
Yeah, so I think the deal is you have to live in BC or have lived in BC within the past 2 years. It doesn't necessarily have to be published by a publisher in BC. Like, for instance, Rob Wiersma's Bedtime Story was one of the books.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. That was up among the other 49. For me to read through and think about, and of course he's published by Random House, which is out of Toronto. So
you're awfully busy. Do you still get to interview?
Yeah, actually, you know, as a part of bringing more people on, part of that has been to, in my own head, I've really had to really think about and change the way I think about Books on the Radio and redesign it a little bit. I mean, it's a work in progress all the time. I'm going to do another redesign myself in another month or so, whenever, as you say, I have time.
Yeah.
But I'm finding now that I've got a better program for interviewing and editing. And some of it is stuff that I picked up from you, from watching you in your office. And now I have a better way of pushing of recording and editing my interviews. My problem is that in the past, I would always do this thing where I would just say, oh, don't worry about it, I'll edit it later.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have these 45-minute interviews that I needed to hack down to 27 minutes, and I would never find the time to listen through, edit out, and all the rest of it. So I have probably 30 interviews that I've done over the past year that haven't made it onto the web or onto the radio because they're sitting in a file on my Mac, in a file folder on my Mac, waiting for somebody to edit them. You know, it's kind of weird. It's like somebody joked with me the other day that I could release a box set.
Yeah.
Like an archive of unheard interviews or things like that. And I feel bad because I've done the interviews, and I'd love to get some exposure for the writers or the people that I've talked to, but I just, like, time is tough. So I've got to do a better job of making my process more efficient so that I can do everybody justice, you know?
Yeah. I heard one that you did this week, And I guess I talked to her the same day you did, Margaret Heffernan.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
She's great.
Yeah, that's a great book, isn't it?
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. I think I talked to her a little bit about why I liked her book.
Yeah.
Right at the beginning, and I think I edited it out just to make the time work for the radio show.
Yeah.
But what's great about that book is that it's actually a nonfiction book that isn't just a long magazine article puffed up into a book form.
right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
This book should only be, normally I feel like this book should only be 100 pages long, but yeah. It's somehow 350 pages long. And that's just the state of many nonfiction books that I get sent. And but hers, every chapter counted, and she had so much to say. And, you know, that interview could have gone on for an hour. We could have kept talking.
Yeah.
And talking, and she obviously cares. She's obviously smart, and she believes it's an important thing to talk about.
Yeah, the book is called Willful Blindness,
yeah.
Why We Ignore the Obvious at Our Peril.
Yeah.
You can listen to her on Sean's website, Books on the Radio, and she'll be on the commentary. I guess the interview we did this week will be up tomorrow. Yeah. Sean, thanks for this.
Yeah, hey, man, it's always great talking to you, Joe, and I owe you a breakfast or a lunch sometime, so let's make that happen in the next month or so.
We'll do. The website's for more books on theradio.ca, seancranberry.com is personal website. The Sean Cranberry on the line in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.